The speaker tonight is Vincent P. I've known Vincent for, well, a lot of years. I don't give away our ages and stuff, but but he's one of my favorite people inside and outside these rooms. And I won't take too much of his time up. And Vincent.
I'm Vince, alcoholic. Hey, wow, it's really great to be here. This is where it all kind of started for me. This is home. I grew up in upstate New York in a predominantly Italian neighborhood. I have four sisters. I was the only boy. And, in my house, we were used to having a good time. My father made wine my whole life. When I was 7 years old, I helped my dad dig a wine cellar, and my father made wine every year. So, when I was growing up, wine in particular was kind of like the magic ingredient. We drank wine when we were happy. We drank wine when we were sad. When we were sick, my mother boiled wine and we drank wine, as medicine. When I was little, everybody had wine at the table and I had a little glass and I would get wine as well. It really wasn't, it was kind of like our beverage. As I started to grow up, I found that I did have a fondness for not only wine, but alcohol in general. And as I was growing up, I found too that I drank with my friends, and we experimented, and it wasn't just. As I started to grow a little older and got into high school, drugs were also a factor of my life. For me, it was just kind of, I had like circles of people. I had my family. I had some friends that were kind of like my straight friends. And then, I had my party friends, and I kind of kept my life separately. Even when I was younger, I didn't realize this, but I kind of lived in different worlds. And, as I started to grow up and had relationships and even the people I hung out with, I started to hang out with people from different extremes. And from the alcohol and the drug end of it, it started to become a little bit more extreme. So I kept those worlds separate from each other. So a lot of those people didn't even know the other people. And I kind of started to build a little bit of a story that people thought I was one person out in the working world and in the education, and then at night, it was kind of like a Jekyll and a Hyde. That would start to come out. And life started to go on, and I ended up getting in a relationship, and I got married, and I started, I'm a hairdresser, so I started out in hair in the family. My grandfather was a barber. I never knew him, my grandfather Gaetano, but I heard a lot of stories about him. And I have several cousins in upstate New York and around New York State that are in the hair business. So I gravitated towards that as an industry. And as part of the industry, you kind of got a little bit of a pass about your behavior. That's Vinny, he didn't always show up on time, and sometimes his eyes were a little glassy, and but that was just kind of like, that I got a pass because of the of the business that I was in as well. So, you know, I kind of built that into my lifestyle. And, you know, I got opportunities. When I got into the industry, I started in New York, and then I found out that really to be successful in where I wanted to be in my business, I wanted to really go to a great educational source. So I went to L.A. to Vidal Sassoon, and went to L.A., went to school, and excelled and enjoyed it. And became an instructor, and you know, I lived in LA for a while, and that's where I met my now ex-wife, but my first wife. And you know, I also enjoyed what I did, and I loved people, but again, I had those two separate worlds. And you know, as I grew in the industry and also moved around. I lived in Southeast Asia for a while. I moved to the Philippines and opened a salon there and trained staff. And, you know, I had all these great opportunities along the way. And what I found is that, you know, I would get so close to like just about making it, and then I would blow it, you know. I would blow it because I wouldn't show up, or, you know, my lifestyle was slowly starting to catch up to me, even though I was bullshitting I was a master bullshitter. I mean, you know, I was great at it, man. I lived my own bullshit. I believed it. And, you know, I mean, so everybody else, it was easy because I believed it, you know? And I would have these growth potentials, but I would, like I said, I would only go so far because I would end up blowing it. And then, you know, I was lucky. People liked me, so I would be given other opportunities, and you know, so I would ride those to the end, and you know, and then again, you know, there I was again, you know. But it was always everybody else's fault. It was always, you know, it was my ex-wife's fault. It was my friend's fault. It was somebody that was supposed to pick me up, didn't pick me up on time. It was everything but what it was, you know. It was my lifestyle. It was my drug abuse. It was my alcohol. But, you know, I was far from really, you know, wanting to deal with that. I was so in denial about all of that. So, you know, life happens. You know, I got married. My oldest nephew was only 18 months younger than I was. So I was Uncle Vinny when I was 18 months old. So I've been Uncle Vinny my whole life. And, you know, so my nephew, Jimmy, he lived with me in L.A. for a while. And, you know, we were very close. And he ended up, on my birthday, getting killed tragically in a car accident. You know, I remember so vividly those moments of that, but I also remember how I coped with that death and how I coped with life. Basically, was I medicated. I did whatever I needed to do to get out of myself. I was never comfortable in myself. And I did whatever I needed to do to get out of myself, whether it was drugs, whether it was alcohol, whether it was sex, whether it was inappropriate relation, whatever I could do to just not be in me. I mean, for me, it was like I tried to find that perfect balance of not feeling but being able to kind of go through life, you know, like work. Like, you know, be somewhat functional, but I was not quite there. And, you know, I honestly can't even remember sometimes moments of my life because I wasn't really there. I was kind of detached. You know, I had this hole in my soul, man. I don't know if you guys ever feel it, but I had this hole and I tried to put everything in it to fill it. Anything and everything. And then, you know, I tried living in different places. I tried all kinds of things. And I still, you know, I was in this state of denial that, you know, it was everything but. And my father died. You know, I drank, I medicated, I ran. You know, my sister died. I was there, but I wasn't there. You know, I wasn't somebody that my family could count on, because, you know, my family would probably be more worried about me being there a lot of times because of how was he going to show up. You know, I mean, what kind of state of mind is he going to be in? And, you know, that's how my life pretty much was for a long time. You know, I got divorced. I left L.A. because L.A. was, you know, I had to get out of the fast lane. And so I had lived in Atlanta for a while, but, you know, I had some friends here, so I came back to Atlanta, you know, so I tried the location change, you know. Okay, L.A.'s just, you know, okay, it's not the right place for me. So I came to Atlanta, and, you know, I got involved in another business here, and again, in the hair industry. And, you know, I had a lot of opportunities. I ended up getting another business, and that business basically went up my nose. You know, I lost that business. And, you know, I ended up working for a friend, and, you know, it was like I'd get close to being successful the way I really thought I needed to be successful, and I'd also get close to hitting my bottom, but I didn't really hit my bottom. You know, I was kind of like bouncing, you know, and I was losing friends. You know, I mean, my healthier friends, they tried to tell me, they were saying, Vinny, man, we love you, but, you know, you got to stop drinking, man. You know, your behavior is just not good. I mean, you know, I would listen to them, and, you know, the same bullshit. You know, I mean, I just bullshit them so they would go away. You know, and eventually they did go away, and you know, I started to have the using world that I was hanging out with. Well, the bar started to get lower, so I could just keep just a little bit above that bar. I wasn't quite as bad as some of the people I was hanging out with, you know. I mean, they were really, you know, some of those people were pretty. And it was my way of you know, thinking that, well, it's not really that bad. And so life kind of continued, and you know, I lost the salon, lost the car. I was losing a lot of stuff. I don't know about you guys, but man, I had a lot of stuff. All of a sudden, I didn't have anything. It's like a lot of my stuff was gone. But you know, it was always someone else's fault. And I eventually, on this journey that I was on, you know, it got, I mean, you know, the thundra got, you know, harder and harder. And eventually, you know, I mean, that's kind of what it was like. I mean, that was my life. You know, I always had a family that loved me, but my family didn't really know a lot of what I was up to. You know, they would know that my mom always, you know, she felt like, you know, my son, he drinks too much. You know, I wish he wouldn't drink so much. And, you know, when I would go home to visit, my mom was still in New York, and I'd go home to visit, the alcohol would rob me of my time with my mom. I mean, that bottle was like, that magic wasn't there anymore, man. It was like, it was robbing me of the things I love, but I couldn't see it, man. I just couldn't see it. I couldn't see it. And, you know, Easter Sunday, March 30th, 1997, I got to a place where emotionally, spiritually, I lost it, man. I had an emotional, just, I kind of cracked. I was I was with my wife, I was with some friends, I have, when I would get past that point, I would have rage in a way. I don't know where it quite came from, but it was like I was mad at myself, I was mad at the world. Well, when I hit my bottom, this ended up being my bottom, you know, I smashed my hand through a glass table, and you know, I mean, this is what I do for a living. I mean, I love what I do, and I could have lost my hand. So I ended up in the emergency room. And I had a friend that was a doctor, actually, that had worked here many years ago, and I called him, and he suggested that I come here. And of course, I was in the emergency room, and you know, I'm. The denial was still so strong that I was starting to think, you know what? Maybe I just had a bad day, man. I mean, you know. And by the grace of God, I made the commitment, and I came here, and. Now, you know, I mean, I'm still out of it, man. I had so much stuff in my system. So, you know, they admitted me and took my belt and locked me up. And, you know, I mean, I had never been in a situation like this. I was so beaten up. And I tried everything, man. I tried everything I possibly can my way. I tried moving away. I tried not drinking Wild Turkey anymore. I said, okay, no more drugs. I mean, I'm only gonna snort it. I'm not gonna do anything else. I mean, you know, I tried, I you know, I kind of went, I tried it all, man. I tried like, okay, I'm not gonna, you know, I'm not gonna do it for a week. And what I was doing was, you know, I never really surrendered, man. At one time I was kind of, from an employment standpoint, I was kind of like strongly advised to, you know, go to some meetings. You know, so of course, you know, I did have a little bit of common sense, like, you know, the job or, you know, I needed some money to get, you know, what I needed to get, you know, so, you know, I went to meetings, but I never really, you know, I just attended. So I didn't drink, but I substituted some other stuff for, you know, the alcohol. And, when I truly hit my bottom and I came to Ridgeview, I surrendered, man. I was done. I tried everything. I was done. I was ready to pretty much listen to anything anybody had to tell me to live. And I was in Cottage C. I don't know what they call it now, but that's where I was. And, you know, I read my big book, and they told me to get a sponsor. I got a sponsor. I came to meetings. I sat right in these rooms, man. I heard somebody up here say, I got 30 days. I was thinking, 30 days? I mean, 30 days. I couldn't imagine 30 days, man. I could not imagine sometimes 30 minutes. And then I went through treatment. And before I left, I met Sam Anders, or Sam A. And Sam told me about the alumni. And I don't know about any of you, but I didn't know sober people, man. I hung out with people like me. You know, even real religious people I was a little scary about. You know, I mean, you know, I had my lifestyle, and I wanted to be with people that lived my lifestyle so I could make my lifestyle okay. And that's how I lived. And so I didn't really have, like, you know, they told me you needed to change your playgrounds and your playmates, man. Well, you know, I was going to be all alone. All my playmates were out there playing basketball and, you know, that kind of court. So Sam told me about the alumni. So, you know, I got involved in the Ridgeview alumni. And I started to meet people that my whole life, I hung out with people that kind of looked and, you know, had a certain look and a certain feel. Well, you know what I learned that was so important to me when I came here is I started to look at people on the inside. And there's so many people I've met since I've been sober that look so different than anybody I would have normally hung out with when I was, like, you know, getting high and drinking. And man, that's what it's like. I mean, it's like identifying with the inside rather than the outside. And the alumni program was, like, crucial for me because I really didn't have friends that, you know, that were sober, that were healthy, you know? And then the program told me, you know, it's a spiritual solution. And they told me to go to meetings. They told me, they said, you know, 90 and 90. Well, man, I went to 120 and 90. I mean, I was going to a meeting in the morning. I was afraid for my life because that was so strong, that lifestyle that I had. And so, you know, I started to get a little time. And, you know, of course, I was feeling good, man. I mean, you know, I was so used to being out of it for so long, I was coming alive. So I was trying to tell the world about this great program of AA, you know, and my family, and, you know. But everybody wasn't getting it. You know, I was getting disappointed. Like, you know, they don't understand, you know. And the more meetings I went to, you know, and then I started working with a sponsor. Now, I don't know about you, but, you know, they told me, what do you do with a sponsor, man? I mean, you know, another guy that you talk to, and my sponsor was great, and I met with him once a week, if not more, and my sponsor was like, a man that I never really had in my life ever. I mean, he was somebody to be really honest to. And, you know, and I was encouraged to really tell him everything. And I did stuff that, you know, could go to jail for this stuff. You know, I was, like, uncomfortable telling him about this. You know, I mean, this was not what I was used to. I mean, I'm Italian, man. I keep this stuff to yourself. You know, it's not... It just wasn't in my culture. And, you know, so it was a whole new way of life for me. And, you know, the more I worked with my sponsor, you know, we started working on the steps. And so I started to get a little time. And after I was sober for a while, you know, some of my surroundings that, you know, my surroundings, my life, my partner, some of my friends, well, you know, they weren't choosing the same direction as me. And, you know, my life when I first got sober was falling apart. It was out of control. And now I got all these feelings, man, because I never had feelings before. When I started to get a feeling, good, bad, and different, man, I got high. I drank. I mean, I tried to get that perfect, you know, so I could still walk, but still, you know, not feel anything. I didn't want to feel. Feelings for me were going to kill me. That's what it was. It was, man, I couldn't walk from one end of one feeling to the end. I just want to medicate. That's what I wanted to do. So now, you know, now I've taken away what I used to do. I can't do that anymore. So, man, that's why. I don't know about you guys, but, man, I went to a meeting in the morning and a meeting at night. I started and ended it, and I it was working. I mean, I would call people and ask them for rides. I mean, I'd take the bus. I was told early on in recovery, if you spend 50% of the effort staying sober as you did getting high. And I tell you, man, I was out in snowstorms. I was out, man, when I wanted to get my, I was at liquor stores, man, pounding on the door, man, let me in. And so if I could do this to stay sober, half as, and that's what I did. And you know, my life now, I remember, I'll never forget, I called my sponsor, man, and I met him over at the Triangle at like 6 a.m. before the meeting. And I said, Albert, man, I mean, I'm sober and, you know, nothing's working my way. Everything's nothing. He said, you know, your life is, just because you're sober doesn't mean, it's the first step, your life is unmanageable. Well, you know, for me, my life was starting to catch up to me. And I was having to face it, man. I mean, not only was, you know, these relationships, but, you know, I don't know about you guys, but, you know, I wasn't really that cool with the IRS. Well, they, you know, so now, I got all kinds of, I mean, I got stuff I used to run away from. I mean, I would move. Man, the IRS sent me so many notices, it's time to move, you know? I mean, you know, so now I can't do that anymore. So now I got to call on my friends that are sober. Now I got to learn. They said, it's life on life's terms. And that's what I had to start doing, man. And, you know, even though it was getting better physically, emotionally, a lot of things in my life that were important to me, like the people that I love the most, well, the healthier I got, the more distance between us, because we weren't living the same lifestyle. So I also surrounded myself with people in recovery to give me direction, because, you know, if I would listen to people that didn't understand recovery, they would say, well, you need to get out of that situation and you need to do that. But by the grace of God, I had people around me, like a lot of people in this building and a lot of people here tonight that have been with me all along. I mean, one of my friends is here. When I was at Ridgeview, you know, in order to leave, you had to have a buddy. Well, my buddy's here, man. Billy, man, it'd be like, let's go for a walk. You got to go with your buddy, man. You had to have a buddy. I mean, you know, I mean, what's this buddies? I mean, but you know, these are things that sounded so ridiculous, but man, I mean, that stuff really helps. And all those crazy sayings, you know, fake it till you make it, and, you know, life on life's terms. And so I struggled, man. It was not easy. But I tell you what, I didn't drink. And it was a miracle. I didn't drink. I didn't use. I cried. I reached out. I struggled. And, you know, with my relationship, it was the first time in my life I had to make a decision to save my life and to work on my own shit. And man, I had a lot of shit to work on. A lot. So it was painful, but it was that power above that created that for me, and it was probably the best and only way that it forced me to work on my own recovery. And so that first year was very difficult, but it was also very rewarding from the standpoint that it forced me to go to 2 meetings a day. It forforced me to go to Al-Anon because a lot of people that were important that I loved in my life were not quite on the same path as me. So, you know, in one way, I had a mirror every day on what it looked like for other people, how it was with me being out there. And so it was like a double way to recover in a way. And as I, you know, as time went on, well, you know, I got to spend time with my mom, man, you know. And, you know, I think about it, and I got sober in 97. My mom passed away in 2000. And even though it was a short amount of time, it was a lifetime. Because I was present every time I was with her. And she knew. She knew I wasn't drinking anymore. She was so happy. I remember when she died. Before she died, she had a stroke. And it was kind of a turning point for me. It was the weekend of the gratitude meeting here at Ridgeview, and you know, even though I was not on campus, alumni was kind of like my safety net, and I didn't know if I could. I was so torn to be with my, you know, go to New York and be at the hospital and miss being here with everybody. I didn't know if I could do it, man. And I called my sponsor and I called some friends that are, you know, in this room, and I hit my knees and I prayed and, you know, and I went. And I was with my mom, and it was so amazing because my family called me. My family leaned on me to guide them through. And I was the one they ran away from, man. And I didn't drink. I didn't run. I faced it. It was a turning point, benchmark. Soon as I came back, came here. And I shared that experience with alumni in my sober community. Powerful stuff, man. Powerful. Well, you know, life now, for me, is just so different, man. You know, what I got out of being here at Ridgeview was such a privilege. You know, I learned more about, not just about alcoholism and about drug addiction and about other addiction, but I learned about, you know, my behavior. And, you know, that it's, you know, it's not so much about the drinking and the drugs, man. You know, it's a spiritual solution, our life. And you know, today, man, my home group is the Candlelight Solutions group. You know, and by the grace of God and some people that I met in these rooms, I helped create that meeting, man. That's like a meeting that I helped create. And, you know, there's been a lot of things that have happened in my life that have been painful. But I knew when my mom passed that, you know, she was at peace in a way that she knew her son was going to be okay. And, you know, I've had, you know, my mother-in-law, she passed away about 4 years after my mom. And my mother-in-law, you know, we had a, you know, a little rocky start, you know. I mean, she was concerned about her daughter, and, you know, and rightfully so, you know, because when we first met, I was out there, you know, and you know, she's, and I remember meeting her at the airport, and she didn't even let me carry her luggage, you know, and I was thinking, this is going to be tough. But, you know, that's what it used to be like. Well, you know, before she passed away, you know, I told her, I said, Mom, I'm going to take care of your daughter. Don't worry. And, you know, I used to say a lot of things, man. I used to say a lot of things, make a lot of promises. But, you know, now I keep them. Because I can, man. That what happened, that bottom, I mean, I call it the worst/best day of my life, and I hold it so close to my heart. Because that was the beginning, man. That's when the sun started to come back in, man. I was in the darkness, and it was lonely. Even if I was with 200 people, I've always been the, you know, I like people. I like big parties. But I could be with 200 people, and I'm alone. That's how it used to be. And you know, now it's not like that anymore. And I remember somebody saying that to me. You never have to be alone again. And, you know, I'll never forget the day I was at my house, man. I was talking to my sister, and I told my sister, you know, sis, I feel comfortable in my own skin. I never felt that way before. I never was able to feel I had to, like, had to have had distraction or, you know, do something, or I was able to be with myself. I mean, it's like the most beautiful feeling. And, you know, recovery's given me, I mean, one of my most dearest friends, somebody I grew up with in New York, I mean, like, well, you know, man, really hurt me. And being Italian, you know, I mean, somebody hurts me, man, the old days, you know, there's a different approach on this. It might not be me, but, you know, I can make a phone call. Well, you know, they said, no. I was with my friends, and, the, you know, and I also had some ill feelings about my employer, you know, and we would get together, these friends, my new friends now, these are my sober friends, and they'd say, they'd listen to me and let me talk, and they'd say, Vinny, you might want to look at this a little differently. And we suggest you pray for these people. Pray for them. I mean, I wanted to have them whacked. Pray for them. I mean, I couldn't stand looking at them, man. I'm under these people, you know. Anyway, I knew that old way, you know, I used to be in the driver's seat. I'm not in there. So I listened, and, you know, and I'll tell you, man, those prayers were tough because I had a lot of uncomfortable feelings. But I did it. And I would ask my sponsor, especially with this friend that really I had some challenges with. I said, Albert, so how do you know when you've done it, when you've done it? He said, Vinny, he says, you'll have this feeling that you'll be in the same space with this person, and there won't be anything there. It'll be freedom. And I couldn't imagine it. So, you know, I continued to pray. And I prayed, and then it got a little easier, I have to admit. And, you know, I honestly started to like this new life I was having. You know, good things were starting to happen. I just liked the way that the people I was surrounded. I tell you, I had friends with no strings attached, man. These sober friends, different kind of friends. I mean, I had a lot of friends before, but I had an angle with them, and they had an angle with me. There was paybacks. These new friends, no. And they, I tell you what, too, they were pretty honest. If they saw something that was, I was going off on the, they said, oh, Vin, you know, they didn't worry about hurting my feelings. They were more concerned about me staying sober. And those were real friends, man. I started to really see what real people were like. And there was some time that passed, and I ended up being at this restaurant and bumping into this old friend that I had some real challenges with, that I had been praying. And it was amazing because I wasn't obsessing about that person. In fact, I went and shook their hand, I wished them well. Now, I'm not going to have dinner with them and hang out, but I walked away from that experience with an incredible sense that I had never experienced before of freedom. I had to let go, man. It was awesome. It was the most awesome thing I had ever experienced. I've never experienced that. It was the best high I had ever had. It was better than any high I ever had. And, you know, it's been like that, you know, and you know, my life now, you know, last year I told my wife for our anniversary, I said to my wife, I'm gonna buy you a new house. And I bought her a new house, man. We just moved in about 2 months ago. And you know, it's like when I say things now, you know, the program has taught me to be a living example, not a talking example. And that's all I used to do was talk. I mean, now it's my actions. And people start to trust me now because, I mean, there are a lot of people now that only know me this way. I mean, I got like a lot of people that know, I mean, there's still some people that know me from, you know, back when, but they know me too this way. So it's different, man. It's different, and it's beautiful. It is like the most awesome way of life. And everything that's been suggested to me, you know, I've had reservations, but I'll tell you, man, you know, my sponsor used to say as things were getting better, he said, you know, you keep working the steps, he says, that's when the real promises come true. And for me, I'm a living example, man. They do come true. I mean, they work. It's a beautiful way to live. And you know, about a year ago, I started, you know, I wanted to physically be in, but you know, it's amazing. I mean, all these years I was trying to kill myself. Now I'm trying to live longer and, you know, be healthier. And, you know, so I started a workout program, and you know, so I'm doing this physical, and you know, it's like, for me, it's like meetings are, well, I gotta work on my spiritual muscle every day too. And that's what meetings give me, and that's what talking to people in sobriety give me, you know? Because it's easy for me to, if I hang out with the wrong people, I start to think, maybe, you know, hey, you know, it's been a while now, you know, maybe I can hang out with this group. But, you know, for me, it's not just about drugs and alcohol. It's about my lifestyle, man, because if I lie, cheat, steal, be dishonest, that's not living a spiritual life. You know, living a spiritual life is what, it's about doing the next right thing. And it's not about doing it perfect, man. You know, I mean, that's what used to get me, I don't know about you guys, but I used to get the, you know, well, if I can't do it perfect, you know, fuck it. You know, I'm not. And then I just, you know, I go do it my way again, you know. You know, if somebody pissed me off, you know, I'm going to, you know, I'll show them, you know. And, you know, now it's not like that anymore, man. It's not easy all the time, but it's just a great sense and a great way to live. I just wanted to read one thing that I read this morning, and, you know, every day in the morning on the way to work, I talk to at least one or two of my friends in recovery. You know, I go to meetings regularly, talk to my sponsor. I stay connected. And for me, that's very important. Because it's very easy to get caught up in what life's all about. But more importantly, if I don't put my sobriety before anything else and everything else, I lose everything else. Because I've tried it all the other ways, and it doesn't work for me. I mean, for this alcoholic drug addict, it doesn't work. So, you know, that this morning I just read this in Grapevine, and I just thought it was beautiful. It talks about the five H's combine into a powerful formula for success, starting with hope, passing through honesty into gracious humility. We become human again, taking our rightful places in society, and by living a well-rounded life, develop an integrated personality, free to express gratitude and pass on to others some of the blessings we have enjoyed these recent weeks, months, years. Truly a magic formula for continued sobriety. I close with that. Thank you very much.
How was that for language of the heart? Thank you so much, Vince.